Welcome to Rapidly Rotating Records number 1282, an hour of toe-tapping music from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s, with yours truly, Glenn Robison. We've got dance bands, hot bands, sweet bands, show tunes, novelty tunes, blues, jazz, and more, on everything from Aeolian to Xenophone, and by everyone from Aronson to Zerke. On this week's show, we'll be hearing about some volunteers, celebrate Lloyd Huntley's birthday, engage in some antics with semantics, take a musical tour of California, and celebrate National Curmudgeon Day.
What?
Yeah, you. Back on the January 12th show, I played The Old Concert Hall in the Bowery by Hoke Rice, and said I didn't know who wrote it, but it was possibly written by Hoke Rice. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I received a nice email from listener Robert with some additional information. The Old Concert Hall in the Bowery actually goes back to the 1890s with the original title, She's More to Be Pitied Than Censured, written not by Hoke Rice, but by William B. Gray, G-R-A-Y. William B. Gray was a writer, vaudevillian, and singer. His two most famous poems, She Is More to Be Pitied Than Censured, and The Volunteer Organist, were both written using the pseudonym W.B. Glenroy. Why W.B. Glenroy? Well, because Gray got his start in show business as a member of the Glenroy Brothers, who were burlesque pugilists.
What?
Exhibition boxers. From around 1890, the Glenroy Brothers' act had them appearing as a farmer and a gentleman in a highly choreographed, harmless demonstration of the art of self-defense. But in 1896, the Horton Law legalized boxing in New York State, and amateur boxing was outlawed. In 1899, the Glenroy Brothers' act at the Casino Theater was halted by the New York Police Commissioner as violating the Horton Law, even though it was clearly not a boxing match. The following year, the Horton Law was repealed by the Lewis Law. William B. Gray teamed up in duets with composer George L. Spalding, who performed under the pseudonym Henry Lamb. Gray and Spalding also ran a music publishing company with hits including Give My Love to Nellie and Old Jim's Christmas Hymn. Gray's poem, The Volunteer Organist, written in 1892, was adapted into a play in 1901, into a novel published by J.S. Ogilvie in 1902, and a silent film released in 1913. George Spalding added music to the poem in 1893, and the song became very popular, with recordings made into the 21st century, including this one by Peter Dawson, to start off a volunteer segment.
The village church one Sunday morning said, our organist is ill today, will someone play instead? An anxious look crept o'er the face of every person there, as eagerly they watched to see who'd fill the vacant chair. A man then staggered down the aisle, whose clothes were old and torn. How strange a drunkard seemed to be in church on Sunday morn. But when he touched the organ keys without a single word, the melody that followed was the sweetest ever heard. The scene was one I'll never forget as long as I may live. And just to see it all again, all earthly wealth I'd give. The congregation all amazed, the preacher old and great, the organ and the organist who volunteered to play. Each eye shed tears within that church, the
congressmen grew pale. The organist in Benoni had told his own life's tale. The sermon of the preacher was no lesson to compare with that of life's example. Oh, sat in the organ chair. The scene was one I'll never forget as long as I may live. And just to see it all again, on earthly wealth I'd give. The congregation all amazed, the preacher old and gray.
they brought the old Raymond home. Let's give three cheers for the three volunteers. Hooray, hooray for the Raymond. We thought them lost, but we're glad they crossed with a good old ship like the Bremen. The brave, brave men crossed the ocean. What nerve, what love, what devotion. So give three cheers for the three volunteers. Hooray, hooray for the Bremen. But we're glad they crossed with a good old ship like the Bremen. The brave, brave men crossed the ocean. What nerve, what love, what devotion. So give three cheers for the three volunteers. Hooray, hooray for the Bremen.
The popular American vocal duo of Jim Miller and Charlie Farrell with Let's Give Three Cheers for the Three Volunteers, written by Jack Palmer and Irving Mills. Victor 21367 was recorded April 16, 1928. Almost nothing is known about Miller and Farrell other than Miller was the tenor and Farrell the baritone. Before Miller and Farrell was the New York Military Band with John Philip Sousa's Volunteer March. Not to be confused with the March of the Volunteers, the Chinese national anthem since 1978, originally titled March of the Anti-Manchukuo Counter-Japan Volunteers. That's from Edison 4-Minute Cylinder 3512, recorded April 9, 1918. And we started off this volunteer set with Peter Dawson and the Volunteer Organist. From HMV 78B3630, made July 10, 1930. Australian bass baritone Peter Smith Dawson was born January 31, 1882, and made his first recordings in 1904 when he referred to the gramophone as an instrument of torture for the artist who needed lungs of leather to make impressions in the wax cylinders of the time. Dawson transitioned into the electrical age and recorded into the late 1950s. I'm Glenn Robison, and you and I are listening to Rapidly Rotating Records, bringing you vintage music to which you can't not tap your toes from rapidly rotating 78 RPM records of the 1920s and 30s. This very day, February 9th, marks the birth in 1900 in Nova Scotia, Canada, of Lloyd Leon Huntley to James Austin Huntley, a minister, and Eliza Estelle Shaw. He graduated from Colgate University, a prestigious private liberal arts institution in Hamilton, New York, and while there, formed his Isle of Blues Orchestra with five fellow students in 1923. Huntley played piano and the orchestra was heard on radio in the 1920s before making recordings and touring both the U.S. and Europe. A 1926 article in the Binghamton Press called them America's foremost college dance organization. Huntley married Catherine Seabury on July 14, 1930 in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and after the orchestra disbanded, he returned to work for Colgate University as the director of student activities. He died July 12, 1979, and is buried in the Colgate University Cemetery in Hamilton, New York. Here are three from Lloyd Huntley.
I could always find you near. Now I'm alone in the rain, oh, so lonely. When they turned to gray, like a bird you flew away, left me alone in the rain. Or I don't care, let it bitter patter, it doesn't matter, it only grieves me so. Who knows, my stormy weather pal was a fair weather gal who left me alone in the rain.
Thank you. but the same old you. The same old place, the same embrace, but not the thrill I knew. You love someone, who can it be? Please tell me, hun, because I can see that it's the same old moon. The same old you, but not the same.
There you have three from Lloyd Huntley and his ILO Blues Orchestra. We just heard The Same Old Moon, composed by Jerome Kern. That was an instrumental, but there are lyrics by Otto Harbach and Bert Kalmar. That's from Brunswick 4643, November 12, 1929. Before that, Frank Silvano vocalizing on Promises, written by Al Sherman and Al Lewis. Brunswick 4784 was recorded April 17, 1930. We started our little tribute to Lloyd Huntley with Alone in the Rain. The vocal trio is unidentified, but Brunswick 4703 was recorded December 10, 1929. Alone in the Rain and the flip side, Moanin' for You, as well as Molly, were all written by Dan Dougherty and Edmund Goulding for the now-lost motion picture The Grand Parade, starring Helen Twelvetrees and Fred Scott. As you know, I'm a fan of words, and last week I received my copy of a 2008 book by Saul Steinmetz titled Semantic Antics, How and Why Words Change Meaning. It's going to be the source for many segment topics on the show, starting tonight, with the very first entry in the book, A1. When used in the name of a business or product, of course A1 steak sauce comes to mind, although I never use the stuff, everyone knows A1 to mean first class, top of the line, superior, or of the finest quality. It first appears with that meaning in Charles Dickens' Pickwick Papers in 1837. But A1 was originally a technical nautical shipping term. In the second half of the 18th century, London merchants, shipowners, and captains would gather to make deals, including sharing the risks and rewards of individual voyages. They needed a way to assess the condition of each ship, so in 1764, Edward Lloyd began publishing Lloyd's Register, which classified the quality of ships. The condition of the hull was classified as either A, E, I, O, or U. And the outfitting of and equipment aboard the ship was originally classified as G, M, or B for good, middling, or bad. But the letters were soon replaced by the numbers 1, 2, and 3. A1 in Lloyd's Register was not measuring quality, safety, fitness for purpose, or seaworthiness, but strictly evaluating risk. In the Pickwick Papers, Dickens took the technical term A1 and used it figuratively. And for this segment, here's an A1 set of rapidly rotating records, beginning with Charles B. Smith.
About the funny things you do. The story has no ending, folks. I'll sing the song to you. My gal and I went a huckleberry hunting, and all she did was laugh. So I took out my little A1 brown and I got her photograph. Thank you. Toad Frog told the elephant that a tail he'd never had one, and said, "Elephant, don't you wink at me, you great big son of a gun." Again the frog it whispered, "I believe 'twould be no sin for you to divide with me, big boy, you have one on each end." That Adam and Eve one day did love one another true. The story has no ending, folks, I'll sing the song to you. My sweetie and I took a motorboat ride, and all she did was laugh. So I took out my little A1 brownie and I got her photograph. Well, now, if you promise to keep quiet, I'll have this little chat about photography.
Yes, that's good.
Now, cameras, as you know, are very tricky things to deal with.
Oh, they are sticky things to deal with. You know, only the other day I got one in stuck in my top plate. It was terrible. All bits of nut, and it was awful. It took me about a quarter of an hour to get rid of it.
I said cameras, not caramels.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Sorry.
Now, of course, the most important parts of cameras are lenses.
Yeah. Oh, you can't say that, old boy. Can't say that.
Why not?
That's not grammatical. You should say lens. I lend, he lends, or he borrows, or he scrounges, you see. You can't say lenses.
Yes, you can. You don't understand me. The lens is in front of the camera. Oh. And it is through this that the light gets to the plate or film.
Oh, this sounds like a little dental outfit, doesn't it?
Now, supposing you were photographing a pretty whitewashed cottage with an outhouse beside it.
Yes.
Have you heard what I said?
Oh, yes. You said, supposing I was photographing an outhouse with some whitewashed porridge inside it.
I said nothing of the kind. I said a whitewashed cottage with an outhouse.
Oh, tell me. Who's responsible for whitewashing this out?
How the dickens thing? Do I know?
Oh, well, that only proves my point.
What point?
Quart. Quite. You see, the point is this. You don't know this. I'm going to tell you this, if I can think of it. Now, what's the difference between a captain of a ship with one eye on the bridge and another eye on the chart room, having a drink in his cabin, and a woman standing on her head in the bathroom, holding a sponge in one hand and balancing a loofah on her left foot? You would
what?
Know.
What?
Yeah, what?
What?
What do you mean, what?
Well, I don't follow the thing at all.
Well, I've just asked you. Why is a captain in the bathroom with one eye on why is a woman standing on her head on the bridge with the captain having a drink out of a sponge?
There's no sense in this.
Of course there is. You're very dense this morning, this afternoon, this evening. What's the matter with you? Why is a captain in a whitewashed cottage with all his eyes on the bathroom, having a deck...
Now, let me get this right. What is the difference between a captain with one eye on the bridge and another on the chart room having a drink in his cabin and a woman doing ridiculous balancing feats in the bathroom?
I never said anything about a woman with a ridiculous thing on her feet in the
bathroom.
Did? I didn't. She got no... What's the difference between a chart with no captain, with a woman, in his cabin, with both her feet on the bridge, on the bath? You've got this all wrong.
Well, I heard you first time. What is the difference?
You don't know, do you?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, neither do I. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. The answer is that both positions are impossible. That's all.
Is that all?
It's a scream, isn't it?
Thank you very much.
I made you laugh.
And you.
Thank you. neither do I. You are sweeter by far than any motion picture star. The camera doesn't lie, neither do I. You belong on my wall to smile at me when shadows fall. So kissable, caressable, impossible to tie. The photograph I took gives you the look of an angel on high. The camera never tells a lie.
Eddie Duchin and his orchestra with Buddy Clark providing the vocal on The Camera Doesn't Lie, written by Edgar Leslie and Joe Burke. Victor 25595 was recorded May 14, 1937. Before that, Charles Clapham and Billy Dwyer, known as the Wireless Nuisances, with the second part of their two-part descriptive sketch, On Photography, from British Columbia 78 DB243, made in 1930. Clapham and Dwyer started out on radio rather than as a stage act. In 1935, they were banned from BBC Radio for an improper joke, and after another risque joke in 1946, the BBC established its Green Book, which listed the subjects, words, phrases, and songs that should not be broadcast. We started off that photography set with Charles B. Smith and My Little A1 Brownie. Singer, songwriter, and inventor Bernard Charles Smith was born in 1899 in Pope, Mississippi, and was better known as Slim. On Columbia 15755-D, made June 26, 1931, you heard Benny Goodman on clarinet, rhythm guitarist James Ferraro, and on steel guitar, mandolin, and harmonica, Benny Nawahi. What? What's that? What did Smith invent? Well, in the 1920s, while he was in a recording session, his brand new Hudson Roadster was stolen. And determined not to have that happen again, Smith came up with what he called a permutation lock. His patent application was filed May 21, 1928, and granted April 22, 1930. I'm Glenn Robison, and the show is Rapidly Rotating Records. This and all of our previous shows are also available 24/7, on demand, anytime at all, online at rapidlyrotatingrecords.com. In my possible topics list is an entry for Harry Talley. I have lots of Harry Talley records to choose from, but they're all from the 19-noughts and not in the best condition, so a whole segment of them might be a little difficult to listen to. But here's one to start off a musical tour of California.
Stars are bright and the moon is shining down the valley one fine night in the far off golden west. Cowboy sighs, he is pleading with his sweetheart Sally. Sees her eyes, and he knows she loves him best. We'll ride away, dear, at break call day, dear, he whispers low, don't answer no, just tell me where, dear, and we'll go there, dear. She says there's only just one place to go, Sacramento, that's the only place I know. Honest, I would be content to live and die in Sacramento. Hi there, hoopla! Hop up and away we'll go, all aboard for sunny Sacramento. Sun comes out and a yell goes ringing down the valley, wild west shout from the top of yonder hill. Cowboy greets with a loud hello his sweetheart Sally. His heart beat when she cried, I'll be there, Bill. Oh, how he greets her, kissed when he meets her. She don't say no, ain't she his beau? Ponies are prancing, two hearts are dancing. They feel so happy, happy as the way they go. Sacramento, that's the only place I know. Honest, I would be content to live and die in Sacramento. Hi there, hoopla, hop up and away we'll go, all aboard for sunny Sacramento. Sacramento, that's the only place I know. Honest, I would be content to live and die in Sacramento. Hi there, hoopla, hop up and away we'll go, all aboard for sunny Sacramento.
кораблях, видя мой целый свет, Сан-Франциско, Сан-Франциско, кто тебе добре зна, мусить чем кохать, як я. Ладных мест есть в свете тыле иле гвязд, леч ты естеч найпенкнейшим с всех мест. Сан-Франциско, ржа на сам дзвенк твых слуг, бо естеч местом мых мажений стук.
Even if you're not fluent in Polish, you no doubt recognize that tune as San Francisco, composed by Bronislaw Kaper and Walter Yerman. The English lyrics, sung in the 1936 motion picture of the same name, starring Clark Gable and Jeanette MacDonald, were written by Gus Kahn. The vocalist on Odeon N45004 was Albert Harris. No, it doesn't sound very Polish, does it? That's because Albert Harris was actually pianist, composer, and singer Aaron Heckelman, born in Warsaw, Poland, on November 28, 1911. His recording career began in 1933 using the pseudonyms Albert Liff and Albert Holm, and he recorded for Odeon from 1936 to 39 as Albert Harris. During World War II, he was in the Soviet zone of Poland, and in 1944 recorded several Polish patriotic songs, lamenting the overwhelming destruction of Warsaw. After the war, Harris worked as a composer in Sweden before moving to the United States, where he died in 1974. Before San Francisco, we took a musical trip from Oakland to Burbank with Ray Noble. Yeah, Ray Noble was an English bandleader, but he moved to the U.S. in 1934. This was Ray Noble and his American Orchestra recording in Chicago on August 8, 1941, issued on Columbia 35708. We started the set in California's capital, Sacramento, with Harry Talley from Victor 5260, recorded July 26, 1907. Sacramento was composed by Harry von Tilzer with the lyrics by Andrew B. Sterling. We're a little late in celebrating it, but January 29th is National Curmudgeon Day. A curmudgeon is defined as an ill-tempered, disagreeable, and quarrelsome person. Now, some people might say, look up curmudgeon in the dictionary and you'll find my picture. But National Curmudgeon Day is celebrated on the birth anniversary of American actor, comedian, writer, and juggler William Claude Dukenfield, better known as W.C. Fields. Fields finessed the persona of a curmudgeon, portraying cantankerous and antisocial characters, while maintaining his affinity for alcohol and his disdain for dogs and children, becoming one of the best-known entertainers of his time. So, to celebrate National Curmudgeon Day, here are some rapidly rotating records about some characteristics of curmudgeons. Curmudgeons do a lot of moaning and complaining, so there you have the Cinco Jazz Band with The Moan from Brunswick 2733, recorded May 13, 1924. The Moan was written by James L. Shearer, who also brought us Pebbles. The Cinco Jazz Band was one of a myriad of names for Joseph Samuels and his orchestra, others including the Alabama Jazz Band, the Astoria Orchestra, and the Great Western Serenaders. They made nearly 400 recordings between 1919 and 1926. Before The Moan, we got some mean looks from Vic Myers and his orchestra on Brunswick 2733, made May 13, 1924. Mean Looks was written by Myers, Bill Zimmerman, cornetist in the band, and Jim Taft, who played trombone. We started with Benny Kruger's orchestra, who were Angry, written by Henry Brunies, Merritt Brunies, and Jules Cassard. This was an instrumental, but there are words written by Dudley Meekum. Brunswick 2949 was recorded August 31st, 1925. I'm Glenn Robison, and I'm very pleased that you've chosen to spend this past hour with me listening to rapidly rotating records. If you had half as much fun as I did, then I had twice as much fun as you. I hope you'll click in or tune in again next week, and as always, I thank you for your very kind attention.